This season of My First Dungeon is sponsored by Soul Muppet Publishing and their backer kit campaign for their latest game, Paint the Town Red. If you're a fan of My First Dungeon, then you know that we are even bigger fans of Soul Muppet Publishing, and we are thrilled to be working with them again as part of this campaign. Everything that Soul Muppet makes reminds us why it is that we love to play games and gets us excited to get back to the table. And with the combo of Zach Cox as designer and Johan Noor as art director, you know that Paint the Town Red is something special. Click on the link to the Backer Kit campaign in our show notes to pre-save this excellent project and let Soul Muppet know that My First Dungeon sent you there. The campaign launches October 10th. And with that, enjoy this episode from our season of Paint the Town Red.
When the world ended, you lost everything. You survived because you had each other. Now, one of you has been infected. In your final days together, what will you say? Hey, it's Elliot from the My First Dungeon team, and I'm excited to tell you about my next game, The Time We Have, A Conversation Between Brothers, a tragic zombie storytelling game headed to Backerkit on October 29th. This game is played on opposite sides of a closed door with a custom deck of cards that will guide you through a story about what it means to be a brother in the final days before one of you turns. To make this game a reality, we need your help to give us the best possible launch on day one. So please head to bit.ly/thetimewehave and pre-save the campaign so you can be notified as soon as we launch. That's bit.ly/thetimewehave.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon, the tabletop role-playing podcast that helps game masters learn new games and make each one better than the last. And today, October 24th, 1929, New York City, Black Thursday. For the Roaring Twenties, the end has already begun. The fabled age of champagne and sin has risen to heights never before imagined. And from the top of the Chrysler Building, now the tallest in the world, you can see every inch of this city, and it is all on fire. You came to New York because you heard it was a city that never sleeps. And for a vampire, what could be better? After a decade of endless revelry, this city has nothing left to lose. And there is no party quite like a funeral. Welcome to this session zero for Paint the Town Red, a new game from Soul Muppet Publishing about being dead inside. It's a game about trying not to be sad and all the ways the world will thwart your efforts, especially when you are undead. It's a game about vampires and all manner of undead partying it up in the greatest cities in the world until it all comes crashing down. So let's strike up the band, everybody, and introduce our players for this season. First off, you know him, you love him. He's a co-owner of Many Sided Media and a staple on My First Dungeon. It is Shanuk Tissara.
Yeah, they brought me back, idiots.
I just read what they put in front of me. I didn't realize you were going to be here.
Oh.
Well, this is a bummer.
That's tough. This is awkward now.
All right. All right.
That's cool.
Next up. You've seen them on our seasons of Orbital Blues and Die. Will he be expanding the blank cinematic universe? Only time will tell. Producer of Beyond the Brook, it is Draconix.
They also brought me back. Idiot.
Oh no. I was told this wouldn't happen again. Why did I just read what's on the prompter? You might remember him from our game of Rom-Com Drama Bomb, as well as shows like The Atomless and The One Shot Podcast. It is Super Dylan.
Hello. I'm just happy to be here. I'm not going to be humble.
We're happy to have you.
And that's three returning voices to this podcast. And we are very pleased to introduce a new voice to this podcast. You might know him as the GM for Beyond the Brook, The Fourth Age, and many more. It is Ed Spence. How's it going?
I'm method acting already. It is dark as sin outside. It is so late. I'm already operating on vampire hours.
Perfect. That's exactly where we want you. Welcome to the season, guys. I'm so excited to have you guys play some sad vampires with me. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm very stoked for this.
Yeah.
Love a little type 2 fun.
I'm jazzed.
It's the only kind we know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as we said before, Paint the Town Red is a game about being dead inside. It's a game about very explicitly trying not to be sad and trying to party away your worries and your cares in a world that will absolutely thwart those efforts, especially when you're undead. There are a lot of things that are true in this world that are true about most vampire stories, but there are also a lot of ways that this differs from a traditional vampire story. For this session zero, we're going to start talking about building the world first and then kind of building some of the characters. Paint the Town Red, the game is going to be hitting Backer Kit very soon. And the game takes place in a number of cities across time and space, usually at the height of their prominence. So, you know, London in the late 1800s, the Roman Empire at its height. And we are playing in New York City at the very edge of the Roaring 20s, right before we tip over into the Great Depression. Truly the height of fun and sin and champagne in the greatest city on the world. I won't take that back. It's the greatest city. I'm sorry.
No, don't you dare take that back. Think,
yeah, let's be very clear. It's official stance.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a little bit about building out the world. We're going to build out some characters together. We're going to kind of connect those characters together with some cohesion stuff. But before we do that, let's talk about safety tools for this game. So for my first dungeon, we have two main safety tools that we use all the time. The first one is the X card. X card is, as many of you know, if at any point something comes up in play that you're just like not feeling, not comfortable with, or just like don't necessarily want the story to go there. If we were playing at a physical table, you'd tap the X card on the table. For us playing remotely, type an X in the chat. Our producers are constantly monitoring that. I'll see it, they'll see it, and we'll change where we're going, kind of redirect the fiction so that everyone's having fun, everyone's having a good time with the story. And the second main tool is lines and veils. This is the classic safety tool. Lines are things we don't want in the story. It's like the line we don't cross. And veils are things that are kind of hidden behind a veil of obscurity. So something that happens off camera but can exist in the world. Some standard lines and veils that we have on My First Dungeon are, we're never really going to talk about homophobia, transphobia, racism, harm to children. It's just not something that we're interested in playing with in our games. We're here to have fun, even if we're going to be having fun by being sad. We have a number of lines and veils that people submitted anonymously, so we've all been able to look at those. So these are our current lines and veils that were submitted anonymously, so like check them out, make sure that you're kind of like internalizing those. But while everyone is here and we're having an open discussion, are there any other lines or veils or things that you just want to mention either on mic or off that you think would be worth everyone at the table knowing that you don't particularly want to have in the fiction that we're going to create together?
Nothing I can think of.
No, it's good by me.
Yeah. Cool. And as is always true with lines and veils, this is not a static conversation. It's not a static list. As these things evolve, as we play our characters, as we figure out what we are comfortable with, what we aren't comfortable with, these lines and veils can shift of we could add something, or if we all feel comfortable, we could move something down a category. If we were all like, oh, actually, I do feel comfortable enough playing in that world. But again, that's a continuing conversation. So we'll kind of like bring that up throughout play with us as a cast. Sound good?
Hell yeah.
Sounds good.
Sounds great.
Do it.
Hell yeah. So one of the ways that Paint the Town Red differs from many traditional undead vampire stories is that the banes, the things that can kill undead in Paint the Town Red, are not as traditional as they are in Dracula. So people are probably familiar with, like, you know, stake to the heart, garlic, silver bullet. Paint the Town Red has a D100 table of a bunch of different banes, some traditional, some much more obscure, many of them drawn from different various folklores about undead. And we're going to roll for three of them that'll help kind of determine what the world looks like. And I think doing this first might be able to like let people twist their characters just that little bit to kind of fit into that world. So, Dylan, would you like to roll a D6 for us?
I would love to do that.
Hell yeah.
Five.
Five. So this first one is probably one of our more traditional ones. Five. It is drowning. How's everyone feel about drowning, by the way? I know that could be a little iffy for some people.
I'm okay with that.
I love it.
Gets the best.
Yeah, does it feel okay. good to say? Feeling really good about it. Actually,
is that too true?
Yeah, I do remember. About it.
Okay,
that's one of the first things I learned about Dylan.
You guys, yeah. You guys feel too good about this. Too good.
Big drowning stan, actually.
So on the D100 table, the first six are some of your more traditional ones, like driving wooden stake, expose them to the sun. So we got drowning. Drac, would you like to roll us a D20 for one of the kind of slightly weirder ones?
I'd love to. Already 17.
Ooh. 17. Yeah, definitely a weirder one. Breaking their skin with a pig bone.
Whoa.
So
interesting.
A way to slay a vampire in this game is breaking their skin with a pig bone.
Damn.
Guys, all right.
Really got to make sure you got the right bones in this game.
Pork free, baby.
Also, like, you know, watch your step in a like butcher shop.
Yeah, because they're like
vampires cannot be butchers. They can't. There's strictly no pork involved if they're ever a butcher.
Yeah.
I love it. And Ed, would you like to roll us a D100 for the last bane?
That is a 40, exactly.
A 40. Oh, fuck. This is going to be the one. Stealing their shadow and setting it on fire.
Whoa.
Dylan
Sorry, what? That lit up like Christmas morning.
What is this, Peter Pan?
I love that purely because of Dylan's reaction to that. I love
the Venn diagram between both your interests of Peter Pan and the supernatural Dylan have
and just drowning, become a circle. All my and favorite drowning. Things are. Oh my god. Oh, I'm living my best life right now. This
fire,
is great.
Water, shadow.
Drowning.
The five elements.
All the elements. And with our powers combined.
Captain Planet.
He's a hero. Love that. Those are going to be very fun. I have a feeling that stealing people's shadows is going to come up a lot because that's too cool not to do it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Though I don't know, breaking the skin of the pig, it could be like, ooh, looks like I'm going to steal, you know, we head fake with stealing your shadow, and then I just got a pig bone, and I just stab you a little bit.
Then all of a sudden, pig bone shank.
It's like, ooh, I was so focused on my shadow.
Good dice rolls. Good dice rolls. I don't want to roll one. It's cool, Brian. You don't have to ask me. That's fine.
It was only three.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll let you roll for a different thing.
No.
I'll let you. I wanted the guests. The guests get to roll.
No, it's cool.
It's just polite.
No, you're fine. You're cool.
All right. Let's. Can we talk about this later, honey?
No. Everyone here can listen to our argument. Okay.
Should we go?
No, we're stuck. Everyone stay, please. We'll have dinner. It's fine.
He likes it when people watch. So we have the banes. Before we move into kind of character stuff, let's take a big step back and kind of look at the world and the adventure at kind of a high level and talk a little bit about like what tone we're looking for and maybe just kind of like general party vibes. Because this is very much a game that is less like an adventure in many like traditional games. So it's you're not necessarily going on a quest. It is best described as a debaucherous night out over and over again. And it's you kind of dealing with the consequences of going too crazy or not going crazy enough and swinging wildly between being alive and being very undead. As this is an undead story and as this is like a vampire story, it can take many forms. It could be very like high drama of Interview with a Vampire, or it could be, you know, high comedy of What We Do in the Shadows. Or anything in between. Kind of on a macro level, what are people feeling just for tone of the world and of the series as a whole?
I mean, I love a sad story. And I know everyone here is so, so capable of mining those emotional depths. But everyone around this virtual table is also among some of the funniest people that I know as well. So I know I'm happy to swing wildly in whichever direction.
Yeah.
Sad and funny is probably a good combo.
Yeah.
Sad and funny go together quite well. But I also think that, like, in this, like, the setup being that, like, we're, you know, chasing these, like, passions to, like, run away from our undeath can lend, like, really well to, like, leaning into comedy to, like, kind of cover up the sadness as well. Like, I think that that's kind of the vibe that I'm picking up.
When you're running from being sad, which is what this game is really about, you often find it in humor, or you try to, like, undercut that with humor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then as far as party group vibes for the four of you, because this is only a 4-episode season, so we definitely want you guys to already know each other, at least be pretty familiar, if not already, like, you know, best buds. What do you guys think? Do you have any vague sense of, is this a group of friends who always meet at the bar? You know, is this a How I Met Your Mother vibe? Is this a Friends vibe? You know, what
oh my
classic
God.
American
oh
sitcom?
My God, codependent friend group who live together?
Oh my God.
I'm down for that.
I've never had that in real life, and I want it so bad. So
Dylan wants there being human moment. That's what
I was literally going to just say.
Oh
that.
Oh my God, shut up.
I was literally going to say that. I kind of want that too, I'll be honest.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hell yeah. Love that. And it's great because it kind of puts you guys all in the same place, and, you know, shared spaces are always great. Hell yeah. So we have the Banes of this world assembled. We know we're in 1929 New York, you know, roaring 20s, flappers, jazz, champagne, the Great Gatsby. I will say, you know, as a New Yorker and as a lover of all things New York, both me, Shanook, and Dylan all living in New York, we'll probably have a lot of New York specifics in this show, but for our two UK friends, Drak and Ed, this will not necessitate you knowing anything about New York. I think if you know vaguely what, like, you know, the Great Gatsby is, I think you're probably going to be in the vibes.
There's East Egg and West Egg. Yeah. It's all good.
The green light. Wow. You guys also have F. Scott Fitzgerald. I thought that was just an American thing.
You guys have books out there?
It actually was invented after we invented heat. So it's actually, it's actually younger than heat. Yeah.
We're still operating off scrolls mostly, but.
Now that we have some stuff about the world, let's go around and talk about some character building stuff and also talk about some mechanics for this game. So first off, anyone who is familiar with Orbital Blues will be very familiar with the core dice mechanic for this game. In Orbital Blues, you're always rolling 2d6, adding a modifier and trying to beat the number 8. So it's a rollover system. In this game, you're rolling 2d6, adding your modifier and trying to beat 9. There are 3 stats you have, which are savagery, allure, and duplicity, which those acronym lovers amongst you will notice that they've spell out SAD or SAD. It's very cute, and I love cute things.
Very cute.
There are also 2 main stats that you're going to be concerning yourself with for this game. They are your pulse, which is kind of like your health. When you're at low pulse, you're very, very close to true undead. You're kind of, you know, you don't feel the world around you. You are at your most sad. And when you're at high pulse, you are as close to human as you can be. You are alive, you are vivacious, you are running around having a great time. And the second stat is chaos. This one's pretty self-explanatory. Low chaos means you're just kind of vibing. High chaos means a lot of shit is happening to you and at you. And these 2 stats are going to bounce around wildly throughout the game. And I think for the players, these are the 2 things that you can be looking at a lot to see kind of the mood and the vibe of your player. And the game kind of spells out pretty well the 4 quadrants of high pulse, high chaos, high pulse, low chaos, high chaos, low pulse, low chaos, what those kind of mean for a character. So I definitely encourage you to pay attention to that as a thing to guide your role playing. I think it's a very cool system.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Hell yeah.
So I think let's go around. I know everyone here has some ideas for characters. Let's go ahead and we'll do them a little bit piecemeal. We'll kind of share bits of our characters to each other. And then as we go, if you want to change or alter some things to fit the group or like start having connections with different characters, feel free. Nothing's set in stone until we say it in episode 1. So Ed, since you're brand new to the show, let's have you first. You're undead. Who were they? And roughly, where and when were they born?
So they were born at the turn of the 19th century. They were born into a workhouse in London, 1802. And they died where they were born. They were there their entire life. Doesn't necessarily remember much of that time. Doesn't remember much of the work. Doesn't remember much of the family. But he remembers his name. And his name was Fitzroy.
Fitzroy. Love Fitzroy.
It's a strong name.
A very strong name. For Fitzroy, you have three stats. You have savagery, allure, and duplicity. One of those stats you get a +2 to. One of those stats you get a +1. One of your stats you get a +0. +0 is pretty much like standard human. +1 is peak of human excellence. +2 is otherworldly, undead influence. Of those three stats, which do you think Fitzroy has a 2, a 1, and a 0 in?
I think not particularly savage. So +0. I think probably a +2 in allure and a +1 in duplicity, I think. Seems about right.
Nice.
But where I'm thinking this character will go.
Hell yeah. Get him.
Love that. Get him.
Get him.
Get him.
Come on, bad.
And Fitzroy, you also get a power of undeath. In the book, there are a number of different powers of undeath that you can have. There are, I believe, 18 in this game, split into monstrous powers, manipulative powers, and mortal powers. You could be old money. You could have a shroud of silence. You could have a beast shape. You could be a lurker. You could have unnatural speed. You could be a face stealer. Are any of these calling to Fitzroy?
There was one, carnivore's touch, which allows me to speak with animals. I might change that, but at the moment that seems, it's jumping out at me. So I think I'll probably go with carnivore's touch for now.
Yeah, talk to all those New York City rats.
Yeah. Gators.
Oh my god, the rat king.
The rat king. Oh my god, that's so fun.
You know, funnily enough, the rat king is one of the NPCs in this official adventure.
That's incredible.
He is an official NPC.
Phenomenal choice, Ed. Phenomenal choice.
Cool. Ed, I'm going to have you hold right there. And then we're going to keep going around and learn. We're going to learn some more about some other characters and also learn some about how you guys connect together. Drac, you want to hit us next?
Yeah. I have a couple ideas.
Yeah,
I think as Ed was talking, I kind of landed on one, but I'll give both anyway. I'm going very biblical with, with my character. I'm either going Lazarus from the Bible or Cain from the Bible.
Whoa!
And I'm leaning towards Cain.
Cain,
oh my
baby.
God.
I think I'm leaning towards Cain. So I guess the way he turned means a lot, I guess, in the world, because I think the way he turned, at least from the, he tells different stories every single time, and I think he refers to the Bible constantly, so you don't know if it's true or not, but according to him, he was cursed by God so that basically everyone would shun him and that no one would harm him. That was one of the things he said, that I'd rather die, let someone kill me, and God said, no, I'm going to put a curse on you that if anyone hurts you, they get hurt, I think like 4 times more. And I think that extended to the angel of death. So I think the angel of death never came for him either. So he's been living since then.
That's fucked up.
As a vampire, or this equivalent of a vampire. Yeah. So I think I looked up, he was born in 3900 BCE.
Of course.
Classic.
Turned probably when I was like in his 30s, I'd imagine. I probably need to look out to see there's actual like numbers to it, but was cursed when he was in his 30s, so I think he still appears 30. Uses now, after so long, I think, and after growing a kind of resentment to whoever must have turned them, God or otherwise, they use he, they, and it pronouns, and all of those, very specifically, each of those, he, they, and it, each first letter is capitalized. whenever they refer to themselves, whenever they write it down, is a capitalized I, capitalized H, capitalized T, and there's he, they, it.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of silent way of being blasphemous and sending against the god that cursed him in the first place.
Mm. That slaps.
That so goes Drac really hard.
Just one character creation, I think.
That's good writing.
That's good writing. That right there? That's good writing.
Award-winning writing.
Award-winning writing is my first dungeon. Yes, an off-mic bit.
Come on.
No one gets.
That one's just for us.
An off-mic bit that needs a lot of explanation.
You can find that in our Patreon.
Just we'll explain it in. Patreon. Yeah.
In 4 months' time.
Drac, for Kane, for your three stats of savagery, allure, and duplicity, what do you think is your +2, your +1, and your +0?
I'm going to go for, obviously, savagery 2. Yeah. We all know the story of Kane. and I think I'm going to go duplicity 1 and allure 0.
Love that. And you also get a power of undeath. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking B-shape. And the animal I'm picking is a wolf. I'm going with a wolf.
B-shape.
And this is a question because I've been thinking about this and I think it'd be cool. Can I be a big wolf that you could ride? Can I be like a Clydesdale?
A Clydesdale
wolf.
A
Clydesdale
horse-sized wolf.
Long ass legs.
Baby. Yeah.
Yeah, that feels right. That feels cool. Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like I feel like I want to give you like, I want to have like a mechanical thing to it. I don't know what it is, but I want to do something with it. I'll think about it.
Should we take the subway or the wolf?
Right. Oh man, the L train's not running. Can we get the wolf? Let's take the W.
Late night on the L wolf.
Kane's like, fine. To turn the door.
The L's down, but we got the Lobo. That's a Spanish language joke.
Nice.
That's not going to make it in the final edit, I guarantee.
No, keep it, keep it, keep it.
Keep it.
No, I have some pride.
Just a string of impenetrable bits.
Kane, kind of the first of our cast cohesion questions as we start moving around the horn here. I've been using the phrase around the horn a lot lately.
You cannot stop saying it.
I simply can't stop saying it. I don't know where it came from. I don't like it about myself, but it's happening. Anyway, Kane, with Fitzroy, how did you first meet Fitzroy?
This is kind of funny. I think Fitzroy approached me thinking I was just a very large wolf and tried to use carnivore's touch on me to talk to me. And I'm just like, I'm a vampire.
Oh my God.
I think we ran into each other. I you can fill in the gaps, Ed, but for whatever reason, you went into the woods somewhere. So I think Ken has traveled the world. Like, they've been pretty much everywhere. So wherever you originated from, said London, maybe you went to some woodlands in the UK or in England. I don't think it was the UK back then. In England, Britain, and ran into this massive wolf and attempted to commune with them. And then it just turned out to be me. Why we stuck together, I don't know. I don't think I've been around many vampires. I think maybe only recently this kind of weird aversion that almost everything had towards me seemed to be dimming a bit. So maybe Ed, maybe with Fitzroy is the first vampire since that kind of diminishing of that part of the curse happened. So you didn't have this weird aversion to me. So you're like the first vampire, like, actually spoke to me, and I was like, hey, I didn't realize this, but I miss talking to people.
I like that a lot. I think if it's all right to add an additional wrinkle to that, I feel like maybe that initial meeting happened like mid 19th century, kind of like 1850s or so. Fitzroy, I think for reasons, would be just out of touch at the turn of the 20th century. But maybe we It's one of those, like, pass each other in the street in New York and be like, wait, hang on.
Wait,
you're that wolf I spoke to.
You're going to try to talk to me in the woods. Yeah, no, I love that. I do love that. Yeah.
Yeah, like, well, while we're in this crazy city together, let's, you know, like, especially the idea of, like, two, like, very literal old friends in this very young, very vibrant metropolis, I think feels quite, like, quite a fun dynamic, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm definitely down for that.
There is also an aspect in this game that undead can always sense each other a little bit. Like, you always get a shiver up your spine or, like, you know, goosebumps. Yeah, like, I like the idea of, because this is a very true experience in New York City of, despite having 8 million people in it, it is amazing how often you are walking down the street and see a buddy and are like, oh, hey, I didn't know you were. Why are we both live in Brooklyn? Why are we both in Staten Island? There's no reason. Shenouk, you want to introduce us to your character?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not?
I'm here. I'll do it.
We got you here.
Yeah, I might as well. My character's name is Savali. She, her. And Savali was born probably around like 300 BC-ish. This is her story. Her parents, her dad invented fire. And not like in like the way that like discovered fire, but like was the first person to be like, oh, cool, I'm going to take this and do capitalism on it. And like really, you know, start selling fire. You know how that happens?
Everyone to monetize fire.
Exactly. Was just like giving it out. Like people just shared it with friends. He was like, no, let's just take this all for ourselves and sell it to people for like stuff. She was a big part of the fire empire. We don't really need to dig into that too deep. But born in like what is modern day Sri Lanka, where fire was invented. Don't look that up.
It's just true.
Fundamentally, true, yeah. Is where that would happen. And then from there, she got into the fire business, obviously, but didn't want to be a fire maker. And then over time was kind of forced into it. But she always wanted to be an artist and shit. But here's what happened. She was grew up, got into fire, obviously, as like brown children have to do what their parents say. Was in the fire business. And
this is the first version of, but you were supposed to be a doctor.
Exactly. This is where it all came from. This is the lineage. This is where it starts for all of us.
The original generational trauma.
Yeah, this is where this
comes from. To do fire business.
And she was like, Mom, Dad, I don't want to do this. And they were like, no, you're going to really revolutionize the way energy is produced in the world. And she was like, no. And then she started the ground starting research of like electricity and whatnot. And then before she could like figure it out, she was killed by another person in the village who wanted to obviously back then, if you killed someone that had a fortune to something, you would get their fortune. That was just the rules back then. Don't look that up. So she was murdered.
Don't look that up.
She was murdered. And by this person, her name was Bethany. And she stole all of Savali's money and stuff. Or not all of it, but like a good chunk of it. And then was cursed with undeath, lived her entire life, and then like trying to get revenge on this person, but then also being like, I can do whatever I want. My parents are dead. So like did start doing art stuff, but then also realized how lucrative the fire making business was. And her parents were maybe right that she should have never been an artist and should have been an electrician. I am not, that's not a, that I feel good about my life. Mom and Dad, leave me alone.
Oh no.
Are you going through something?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I do not think I should have gone and become a consultant. I'm fine.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Leave me alone. And so Savali ends up inventing electricity, and then Thomas Edison steals it.
Oh.
Classic story.
Classic.
To be fair, Thomas Edison stole a lot of stuff.
But now she's an electrician. Yeah. She's an electrician in New York City and also doing art on the side.
She's an electrician in New York City?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Freelance or nice. Port Authority?
Oh, Port Authority, baby.
A union girl?
A union girl. She loves a union girl.
Hell yeah. We love a union girl. I love that. You have your three stats. You have savagery, allure, duplicity for Savali. What are you thinking are your What is your plus two, your plus one, your plus zero?
Yeah, so I'm going to go what does an electrician... What's an electrician?
High duplicity, that'd be pretty dexterous, right?
Yeah, let's go with that. I wouldn't trust an electrician with my fucking life, let me tell you that. I'm kidding. They're great. Two duplicity. Let's do one savagery and zero allure.
Yeah, I feel like you need some savagery. You got to be able to yeah. wrench things and tear things with your bare hands.
Yeah, my bare hands.
Wait, you keep saying bare hands. Do you mean bare hands or bare hands?
Yeah.
No. But you keep saying bare hands. What do you mean by bare hands?
Bare hands.
God.
Oh yeah. No.
Bare hands. It's pretty. What's not to understand, Brian?
I don't get it.
Easy. I don't get it.
Oh dear. And then, what power of undeath are you looking at?
We're gonna go with. I either want to do old money or touch of death.
Ooh, what's touch of death?
I'm one of the few who can curse another with undeath. After activating this power, you may touch a mortal. When they die, the afterlife will not take them, and they will join you in undeath. If they are someone you care about, activating this power costs two pulse rather than one. And then there's a second thing I can do. Those little beautiful things, you know how to make them die. So after activating this power, I can extinguish a candle or other small fires or cause death of a small animal or a person whose misery you have smelt. I said that.
Wait, one more time.
One more time.
There was no way I was going to jump in and interrupt that. That was radio gold, baby.
But I want to maybe if I was in take that, twinge it a bit of I can do little shockies from my fingies.
Ooh.
I like that a lot because it's also very Frankenstein-y.
Yeah.
Of I can bring people back to life. I'm also Frankenstein.
I'm a human defibrillator.
That also means, so in this game, it's uncommon for vampires to be able to make another vampire?
Yeah, in this game, undeath is a curse, but not necessarily just vampire to vampire. There can be a reason for it, and sometimes it's also just you died and you woke up.
Mm.
Cool.
So yeah,
cool.
Undeath is much more malleable in Paint the Town Red than it is in many traditional vampire stories.
That's
awesome. I actually think they give examples of how in the book, how some people might have become undead. And I think literally one of them was there was a lightning strike on someone's grave or something. And mm-hmm. they woke up. Ugh.
Yeah.
God, that's so hot. Love it.
And Shenouk, or sorry, Savali, of Fitzroy and Kane, which of them knows your biggest secret?
I think, juicy. Maybe Fitzroy, because they're more charming. But I think Fitzroy knows Savali's secret. That I think Savali is like a salivarian vampire. They only drink saliva. and so I think they're pretty proud of I haven't drank blood in 10,000 years or whatever. But they definitely do dabble in blood when they when they make out with someone that's been drinking alcohol or something. So they dabble.
Okay.
Rom-Com Drama Bomb is a three-player, GM-less, asymmetrical TTRPG about meet-cutes and mayhem. In this 90-minute timed game, you'll play as two people who shouldn't fall in love and the evil villain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do. Rom-Com Drama Bomb is now available. You can grab it digitally at moreblueberries.itch.io/romcom, or you can grab a physical book, the pinkest book you've ever seen, at moreblueberries.shop/romcom. Check it out and happy rom-comming. Rom-comming? I don't know. Drama bombing?
The Between is now crowdfunding on BackerKit. The Between is a new role-playing game from the creators of the award-winning Brindlewood Bay.
Inspired by Penny Dreadful and Sherlock Holmes, you play as monster hunters in Victoria-era London, investigating and neutralizing these supernatural threats that terrorize the city. Threats that Scotland Yard can't or won't handle themselves. As the story progresses, you become aware of a criminal mastermind pulling the strings behind the scenes. In the end, you will have to face this mastermind in order to save both Queen and country. Rewards for backing this project include the Between's core rulebook, Shadow Society, an expansion book for the game's London setting, and Sons of Another World, which gives you three brand new settings for the Between. And back early to get access to a limited reward, the glow-in-the-dark Mastermind Dice. So head right now to BackerKit and search The Between.
Hell yeah. Dylan, would you like to introduce us to your undead creature?
I would love to. So I'm going to be playing Minnie, who was born Astrid, actually, in just kind of recent, like born in the 1890s sometime, and then died relatively young, turned undead relatively young in around 1915. So young human life, and also pretty new as a vampire as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that she was kind of like traveling to America, like anyway, was trying to do that to like start a new life as a human, but died along the journey and was turned undead along that journey. And in this like, in this relatively short time that she's been undead, I do not think that she has come to grips with it at all. I think that she is seeking humanity in every single action that she's doing still.
And you have your three stats, your savagery, allure, duplicity. Which do you think is your plus two, your plus one, plus zero?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a plus two allure, plus one savagery, plus zero duplicity.
Very nice. Everybody's got different stats. I love it when people have different stats. Everybody's good at like little different things. And then what power of undeath were you looking at? What was sparking your fancy?
I'm taking the life of the party.
Ooh, what does that do?
You enjoy your passions deeply. When you indulge a passion, you can roll twice to see how much pulse you regenerate and choose the higher.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
That's good.
And that actually leads into a good pivot to talk about passions in this game. Every undead in this game starts with two passions. One of them is always drinking blood, and one of them is something else. It could be fighting in duels. It could be murder. It could be affairs, romance, fine meals. It could be Russian roulette. It could be the theater, the opera. It could be expensive dates. It could be painting. It can kind of be anything you want. So actually starting with Minnie and kind of going back around the horn the other way.
Oh, God, the horn again.
The horn again.
God, this horn is getting worse.
It keeps coming back. I don't know what's up with it, but it's you know, it's a nice horn. So, Minnie, what is your passion?
So in Minnie's quest to be so relevant to humanity and so close to humanity, she is indulging in every like human extravagance that she possibly can. She is at the bar, at the party every single night, and she doesn't leave until the very, very last person is gone. So her passion is going to be closing down the party.
Hell yeah. I also really love the idea of what happens when someone else there really wants to close down the party.
Yeah.
No, ladies, I have to close down the party.
No, it's not happening.
Love that. Mini, also a question kind of to bring you into the party a little bit.
Yes.
Which of our other characters here have seen you at your lowest, and how did they or didn't they help you recover?
Okay. Oh, God. I can't. Is it cheating too much to say that they all have seen me at my lowest?
That's great.
Is that too
yeah, it's fine.
Cop out of an answer?
No.
I just think that Minnie is so unpredictable, like so chaotic and so fresh in Undeath that she doesn't know how to act. And I think that like that's how she met these other undead, is like just by how often she slips up and goes mask off in public and has had to be like and has maybe had to be reined in probably different ways by these other characters.
I plan on playing Kane as very much as the devil on everyone's shoulder. So I don't think Kane reined you in. I think Kane encouraged you.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Love that. That's the sickest thing I've ever heard. Great.
Minnie's really given off like a freshman girl who hasn't quite learned how to drink yet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Kane's on their shoulder like, you can drink more. Is that all you're going to drink? You can do more than that.
It was just one cup of
terrible.
jungle juice.
But it's so sweet. How could it be harmful?
Yeah, it tastes so good. Beer tastes yucky, but jungle juice tastes good. I love that. Savali.
Yeah.
What do you think your other passion is?
Before that, can I change my secret?
Yeah, sure.
Savali doesn't know she's a vampire.
Savali doesn't know she's a vampire?
Yeah.
What does she think is happening?
She thinks she's just found the secret to longevity. It's a little bit of like electricity and making out, being a big little slut.
All right. So I gotta know.
You say that only Fitzroy knows this.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. I think everyone would know.
I think everyone might know this is true. Like, I think everyone knows this secret.
Which I kind of love.
I like the idea that everyone knows and everyone has tried to tell you.
Yeah, like, everyone has tried to convince him you're wrong.
Because for this fiction to work, you have to also know that vampires exist.
Yeah,
like they've revealed themselves.
Yeah. I know they're all vampires. Hey, I think I'm just a chill, like I'm one of their chill human friends that's lived forever.
You're the token human friend.
Yeah. Oh, you were asking me what my passion was, right?
Yes. So what is your second passion other than blood?
I think my second passion is I think Savali has tried her best at all types of art and just isn't good at any of them. And like that is what she wants to do. Like that is she loves the arts, but is a bad artist.
Is it both performing? Is it performing and consuming, or is it just performing or just creating?
I think she's the most pretentious person watching consuming art, of like, I can do this, or not pretentious, but just like an asshole, like I could do this. This is easy. And then what she does is bad.
Okay. Love it. What I really love is she goes to you know, like Comedy Cellar and sees someone who's like, I can get up there and do that.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a question for the four of you, but what's Savali, I'll kind of let you lead it. What is the best party you've all been to together? And I guess kind of within that, how long have you guys been living together, cohabitating, going to parties together?
I think if you guys are cool with this, I think the best party we've all been to together was Minnie's like turning party. I think every time a vampire turns, we like throw like all the vampires in New York City come together for like a big turning party. And like, that's kind of like where we all met. And like, kind of, we're like, oh, like we have a spare room. Like, Minnie, come like live with us. Like, you're great. And that's like when the relationship, like, yeah, I think that's my,
I think
my
bitch. If you're cool with this, I think I saw how hard Minnie goes. And I was like, oh, this is.
Yeah.
Oh, they're gonna be a mess. Can we get her in on us? I'll be part of a little homestead.
I think Fitzroy was also like, I need someone who's not pushing like quadruple digits in the flat with us.
we need someone fresh.
I need someone at least younger than middle age.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. I'll keep you young forever.
That's so funny. Who was our last roommate? Was like one of my human friends that you guys ate or something?
Oh, 100%. I think I have a passion, and I think they were my passion. I think they were becoming my passion.
Yeah, because how do you think we and when did we meet? Because I see Fitzroy as having come to America probably late 1916, early 1917, so not that long, honestly.
I think that's about when Mini was turned, right? 1915, was it when Mini
1915.
Was turned?
1915, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, so there's a world where you guys came over on the same boat.
Ooh. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Whoa.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do like that.
Because then Fitzroy, you can kind of like induct Mini a little bit of just hey, this is what you're going through. This is what's happening, you know?
Yeah, don't eat everybody on this shit.
I've been doing this for around a century now, and pretty good.
Yeah. And then Kane comes in, like, God. I've been doing this about four centuries. Eat everyone.
Yeah. She'd be so bratty. So, like, such a pain in the ass in those early days. Like, really annoying. Wanting to eat everybody. But, like, just like, no, somebody has to finish sailing this ship.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So were you turned on the journey across, or
that was my thought? My thought was that she like she hitched this ride like maybe even as like a stowaway, and like but like was pretty poorly off at like the start of it, and like didn't survive the journey. And someone on this ship, you know, like. Or some circumstance. I don't know if someone made her a vampire or if she just like some kind of magical circumstance allowed it. But
I mean, if Fitzroy's on the boat.
Yeah. Like, hell yeah. If you're into that, I'm into that.
Yeah, if that fits Minnie, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
That sounds like
cool
a fun line,
as right? Hell. I love it.
Wait, I'm confused. What just happened?
We're saying that maybe Fitzroy made
Minnie
into a vampire.
My question then, because turning someone into a vampire is a power that Fitzroy didn't take. So is there another method you did to turn Minnie into?
Ooh.
Like, is there one that you know that's tried and true? Was it like an experiment? Like, I guess that's my other question there.
Mm. Or was this a power that you had and lost?
Well, once you do it once, it goes away.
Yeah.
Oh, you can only turn like one person. Oh.
Maybe it's some invisible. Maybe there's some invisible requirements. So maybe it's not everyone loses it. Maybe some people continue to turn people and some people don't.
You have to be actively crossing the international dateline.
Yeah.
It's gonna happen in international waters.
Yeah.
Laws do not apply.
There's no vampire laws.
No laws apply in international waters.
Can't see us. Go.
Yes. Not even the laws of physics apply here.
I kind of like that, so honestly. Human. I do kind of like that idea of like, if you turn someone on the travel, you lose whatever power or you used to turn them. I think that's kind of funny.
That's hilarious.
I hope it was worth it and she's not super annoying.
It sounds like she's going to be super annoying.
Super annoying.
Like, bumps into Kane on the street. Oh my God, thank God.
I do also really like the idea of the Brit coming over and being like, Fitzroy, been doing this for 100 years, turns Minnie's brand new. So it's kind of like sophomore talking to the freshman, being like, I've been there, I know what you're doing. But it's funny to have an English person come over to America, which is a much newer country, and the first two people you meet are 3,000-year-old vampires who are like super seniors who are like, buddy, calm down.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
But yeah, so then maybe one of the first things we would have done after meeting Kane and maybe we went for a kind of party after that, maybe.
Yeah, that was Minnie's turning party then. It had to be.
Yeah.
Once you guys got off. Man, what a fucked up journey for you. You were came in, you had all these human dreams, and now you're just a vampire in America. I'd be pissed.
Rough. Great. Kane, you also have a passion that we've yet to discover. What is Kane's passion?
Kane's passion is hunting humans, and very specifically hunting humans in their wolf form.
Oh, Jesus.
That's so funny. Oh my god, you ate our last roommate.
I actually was like, hey, you wanna let's go to the woods real quick, and then I was like,
go to the woods.
Run. I gave them like a 10 minute head start, and then I chased after them into my wolf god.
Form. He told me they moved to a farm upstate.
I also like that this has to happen in Central Park.
Yeah.
That's the only place that really works.
If a massive wolf ran through like the city proper, I think a lot of people would notice. And I think Kane would do it, but I think enough of their friends are like, hey, this kind of fuck things up for us. Like, okay, fine. I won't. I'll do it in Central Park specifically then.
There's a great story of like New York lore from around this time that some newspaper wrote a big long article about like how all the animals escaped the zoo, of like lions, tigers, giraffes, elephants are on the loose. And it was this big long article. And if you went to the it tossed you to the next page, went below the fold. And at the very end, the last line is, and of course, none of this is true, but it caused a panic in New York City.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That's so funny.
Kane, I like the idea of you being like a local legend. Like people see you and they're like the thing that, you know, parents tell their kid, like, don't be out when the streetlights come on, you got to get in, or the wolf's the big bad, bad wolf. You could be the big bad wolf.
Yeah, I think I'm the big bad wolf. I do think, especially with the curse of Kane, of like everyone having an innate aversion to them, I think they are probably the root of a lot of myths and legends of like the beasts in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So I do kind of like that, them being essentially the big bad wolf here in
Love
New York.
That.
That's great. And then Fitzroy, we've got another passion for you. What is Fitzroy's passion?
So initially I was thinking alcohol, nice and simple. Mm. But with this new bane, one of the ones in the book is drowning.
Sure.
And I feel like Fitzroy edges death.
Oh god, that goes hard.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That is good.
And there are very specific reasons why I'm choosing that, but yeah, I feel like Fitzroy occasionally, like, and I to 100% clarify, not aiming to kill himself, but just sort of
that high you get afterwards. Yeah.
There's got to be a swimming episode. We got to do a swimming episode.
We can do a beach episode. It's just a really sad beach episode.
We're going to go into the Hudson.
Savali has no idea. She's going to try and swim. No.
You see Fitzroy drowning themselves. You see a massive wolf chasing some woman down the beach. You just see the absolute saddest and most devastating beach episode ever.
Honestly, that's just a regular day at Coney Island. Yeah, everyone feel good with just because we are being very specific. This is like not a kill yourself thing. This is a like go close to the edge and like feel the thrill.
Yeah, it's not for.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, cool. I like that.
Extreme sports.
Yeah, sports. Skydiving or
it's asphyxiation.
It's an asphyxiation kink for sure.
it's a kink for sure.
Yes.
That's how Fitzroy comes. Yeah.
Autoerotic drowning.
Autoerotic drowning. Classic. A classic in the genre.
Classic.
Kane's been around for a long time. He's not going to kink shame.
He invented most of them.
Oh my god, bestiality, Jesus Christ.
No!
Hey, monster fucker started somewhere, and I'm just saying.
They might as well have started with Kane.
Oh my god. The sex parties we've been to.
Some great parties. We have our characters, we have their stats, we have their passions, we have the banes of this world, we have your undead powers, we have a general idea of who this group is, this kind of group of undead roommates who found each other when a couple of people came off the boat on Ellis Island. Some things that will come up in gameplay that we'll kind of talk through much more as they happen. So something that you don't start with is a bond, but it's something that can grow and form during play. A bond, in the words of Zach Cox, they wanted to make a game where love was overpowered. Having a bond or having someone you are attached to can give you a lot of mechanical advantages in the game. It's something that you'll find later on, should you so choose. You can, if you flatline, if your pulse ever drops to zero, that is essentially kind of a temporary death state in this game that you recover from and have to kind of deal with. That is a way you can possibly gain some individual banes. So you could have more banes throughout the game if your pulse drops to zero. And also during downtime, you can possibly gain more powers of undeath or change your powers of undeath. Just some things to kind of look at throughout play. The last thing I want to do is find out what your starting pulse and chaos is at. For this, very simple, we're going to have you guys roll a d6 for your pulse and a d6 for your chaos. And that's going to determine the vibes that you're starting with. Someone go ahead and roll for me. Fitzroy, you want to start us off? Tell us what are your starting pulse and chaos?
My starting pulse is 2.
Oof.
And my starting chaos is 4.
Ooh. So low pulse, high chaos. And just so you know, what that looks like, in the game has kind of a 4-quadrant thing of low and high pulse, low and high chaos. Low pulse and high chaos generally means the question it asks is, what happened to get you into this fucking mess? Who did you piss off? How are you going to pick up the pieces? This is like, you're bruised and battered and bleeding in a gutter. You're in prison for crimes you committed. You're standing over a corpse that you just sucked dry. So like, some shit's gone down, but you are more in an undead space than in a living space. Minnie, you want to tell us where you're at?
Yes, I am at a pulse 6, chaos 3.
Oh boy.
That very much tracks for Minnie.
Yes, it does.
So high pulse, low chaos.
Yep.
That vibe is in the book, it listed as, before you get a chance to enjoy yourself, one of your friends drags you into some bullshit. Uh-huh. this is very much, you are closer to mortal than undead. You are like, your cheeks are literally flush. You are feeling right. Alive and good. Your chaos is relatively low, so you're not in it too much, but someone is on the border of drawing you into some bullshit.
Okay, yeah.
Savali, you want to tell us what your pulse and chaos are?
Yeah, I rolled 5 pulse, 5 chaos.
Woo-hoo-hoo! High pulse, high chaos. You are starting off in a like tense, explosive situation. You are mid-argument. You are drunk and high and hungry. You are on the run with authorities on your tail. Like, you are starting off in an incredibly heightened space. You are very alive and shit is going very wrong all around you.
Sweet. That sounds like me.
And Kane, where are your pulse and chaos at?
I also rolled a 5 and a 5.
Hell ooh, yeah.
So you guys are getting into trouble probably together.
Yeah.
Wow. Hell yeah.
Yeah. You guys are absolutely going crazy and shit is popping off. I think if anything, like the vibe of probably what's happening around you guys, all the chaos around you, Minnie, you're like in danger of getting sucked into whatever that bullshit
is. Yeah. Yeah. I also feel like Savali trusts Kane implicitly since we've been roommates for a while and you ate my friend and I did not notice.
Oh no. Oh no. I'm so sorry. Savali.
Fellow human friend.
Hello, human friend.
Oh, there was one more question I wanted to ask. I'm curious what mortals in New York think you are. Like, do you have a day job? Do they see you as like a vagrant on the street? Do they see you as a high class, you know, office worker? Are you holding down a job? Are you just attending parties? What's kind of the vibe of your characters as presented to the waking world?
Minnie is going classic, like classic flapper. She's at every party. She's got no discernible job that people would tell. She's just schmoozing 100% of the time.
You can make a career of that if you really try.
Yeah. She's good at it. Yeah.
Kane, what are you presenting to the outside world?
Oh, I know exactly what I'm doing. Kane is a priest.
Yeah, tracks.
That's funny.
A priest that has three roommates. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also, the idea of Kane being a priest feels like a real fuck you.
Yeah. It's like everything they dedicated their whole undeath to, a big fuck you to the capital G God.
Do we live in like the church rectory or something?
Do you want to? I think that'd be fun.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I guess that'd be fun.
The church rectory.
That's so funny.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Savali, what are you presenting to the outside?
I think Savali has a job as an electrician doing electricity crap all over the city city government. And I also think Savali is the only one that pays rent, even though there's no rent to be paid since it's a church rectory. It's just Kane's.
You tithe?
Yeah,
you just pay it into the alms for the poor box.
And I'm just like, yeah, this is all, everyone else does this too. And nobody needs, like, it's all my money that we're all using together.
I love it. You tithe. And parishioners, if you please be so generous, we're taking up a second offering for the church roof. No church I've ever been to has a functional roof. They all need a new roof.
Yeah.
Why is this?
They all need a new roof. Yeah. It's part of it.
It's part of it. Fitzroy, what do you present to the outside world?
Well, that tithe goes straight into where Fitzroy works, which is at a speakeasy.
Ooh.
Fitzroy works there. He also drowns himself in a very different kind of way as he just kicks back alcohol after alcohol after alcohol.
Hell
Any
yeah.
Any kind of alcohol.
Oh, yeah. You can't get away from me because Minnie's going to be there. Every night.
Yeah.
Do you have a... You don't have to have this name now if you want, but do you have a name for the bar?
Ooh, I don't yet.
We have a bar that's like mentioned briefly in the official adventure called the Shallow Hole, if you want to use that.
I love that. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Let's use that. Hell the yeah. Shallow Hole.
The Shallow Hole. I have a feeling we'll be seeing some of the Shallow Hole. Maybe we start in a tavern. Who's to say? we're doing a slice of undeath and starting in a tavern. You know, sometimes you got to stick with the classics. Oh, who's to say?
Love it.
They're classics for a reason.
They're classics for a reason, guys. I think I want to do, to round us out, to bring us fully around the horn, as we say, is a variation we're doing for this season on Stars and Wishes. We're going to be calling it Thrills and Thirsts. Because we got to be cute with it. Thrills will be favorite moments from the session. So we won't be doing that this episode, but we will be doing thirsts, which are, what is one thing that you want to see out of this season? What is a hell yes for you?
In the book, they very specifically say there's like a unspoken rule with the undead that we basically leave kids out of it. And I kind of would love to have a display of that. Maybe we're like vampires having like an all-out brawl and then a kid walks by and everyone's like, okay, let's stop and move this away.
I really want to show
that rule being followed rather than just ignore kids entirely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a big fan of that. I don't know. I really enjoy when even big bads have a line they don't cross.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Kids being that line would be, I think, really cool thing to see and also just display what's said in the book of this unspoken rule.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Love that.
I like that.
Savali, do you have a thirst for the season?
I'm excited to kind of see like us deal with the Banes. Like, they sound so delicious of like someone's shadow beings. Yeah. Like, what is that even? How does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that happen and like us having to reckon with that.
Yeah, shadow being stolen and set on fire is both of those things are questions that we have to explore. The how to
which
of
means
each of
that
them.
Like your shadow can get stolen, right. And then, like, there's a clock.
Right.
Like, yeah, there's exactly. a timer. Right. Like, you cannot.
We have to get my shadow back. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And in a city that never sleeps, you can't even hide in darkness.
Yeah.
Like, your shadow is always illuminated, always on display.
That's really good.
Love it. Minnie, what's the thirst you have for this season?
I am really, really looking forward to and hope we get to play around with this, like, Minnie kind of being like pulled in different directions by both like the environment and her nature and also by these other undead friends and their different takes on undeath. And I really want to play with that a lot.
Hell yeah. I think, yeah, you got a literal like devil whispering on your shoulder in Cain.
Yes.
You've got, you know, the person who turned you in some way and is also like your, I don't know, mentor, guide, like initial guide in Fitzroy.
Yeah.
And then you got Savali, who's just paying rent.
Living normal life.
That is being split three ways.
Then you've got the starving artist. Really, man, I'm surprised. Starving Artist is a perfect New York staple.
Yeah,
that I had forgotten about. Yeah. I love that so much. And Fitzroy, what's your thirst for the season?
I think given the nature of what vampires are and the breadth of life experience that we have within the group, opportunities, not necessarily of flashbacks, but certainly of glimpses of like, how many versions of these people have they gone through before settling on what they are now? I think is always very, very exciting. Like, what has informed them? And like you say, America is young. Like,
yeah,
New York is a young city. And yeah, what does it mean to have, you know, older people like Savali and Cain walking about this place that defies the laws of gravity while, you know, two relative newcomers step off the boat? I think there's a lot to be played with there, I think.
Yeah.
It's cool that even for mortals, like, New York has a lot of history and living memory. And I think for undead, it's even more so. It's like there were so many people there for all of it. There's a lot of cool stuff to mine there. Before we get out of here, is there anything else anyone wants to add in, either to your character, to this group? Anything you want to add before we close out this session zero and prepare ourselves for session one of Paint the Town Red?
God, I'm so excited we get to live together.
Yeah, this is
going
to be great.
We get to be roommates? This is great.
Roommates. This is very delicious.
The best news.
Hell yeah. Well, we're going to find out what that life is like, how your various pulses and chaos, your passions will all come together on the next episode of My First Dungeon. Thank you for joining us for the session zero of Paint the Town Red. Join us on October 10th for the first episode of this four-part story, and be sure to support Paint the Town Red over on BackerKit. And as always, remember, if you're having fun, you're already doing it right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I'm a vampire. Ah.
Goodbye.
Bye. Ah. Ah. Oh my God, this is gonna be so good.
Rom-Com Drama Bomb is a three-player, GM-less, asymmetrical TTRPG about meet-cutes and mayhem. In this 90-minute timed game, you'll play as two people who shouldn't fall in love and the evil villain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do. Rom-Com Drama Bomb is now available. You can grab it digitally at moreblueberries.itch.io/romcom, or you can grab a physical book, the pinkest book you've ever seen, at moreblueberries.shop/romcom. Check it out and happy rom-comming. Rom-comming? I don't know. Drama bombing?
The Between is now crowdfunding on BackerKit. The Between is a new role-playing game from the creators of the award-winning Brindlewood Bay. Inspired by Penny Dreadful and Sherlock Holmes, you play as monster hunters in Victoria-era London, investigating and neutralizing these supernatural threats that terrorize the city. Threats that Scotland Yard can't or won't handle themselves. As the story progresses, you become aware of a criminal mastermind pulling the strings behind the scenes. In the end, you will have to face this mastermind in order to save both Queen and country. Rewards for backing this project include The Between's core rulebook, Shadow Society, an expansion book for the game's London setting, and Sons of Another World, which gives you three brand new settings for the between. And back early to get access to a limited reward, the glow-in-the-dark Mastermind Dice. So head right now to Backer Kit and search The Between.